Welcome everyone to Know Thy Brand podcast, the branding podcast for women in business. Welcome everybody to Know Thy Brand podcast, a podcast that tackles gender inequality through the brand lens. From brand strategies to marketing tactics, from female leadership to female entrepreneurship, from corporate brand to personal brand, every episode is designed to inspire you and to support you in a journey for success, whatever success means to you. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to one of our episodes of Know Thy Brand. And today with us, we have Pita. Pita is a freelancer, copywriter, and is old friend of mine. We're just trying to remember when we met. It was back in Singapore, and I didn't have children yet. I was probably pregnant, so must have been 2010, 2011.
It's been a while. I lose track of time. I'd say, you know, it's like when they talk about the 1990s, to me seems, you know, there's all those memes about it. Yeah. Only feels like 10 years ago, and it's not, it's 30. So. And we've known each other a while, though, which is great.
Exactly. And I, over the years, I met you when you had a very young boy, because your boy was tiny.
I know, and he's not anymore. No. 6'3".
Yeah, oh, my God.
15 years old, yeah.
And I have to say, you send me every year the postcard with the picture, and every year I'm like, it cannot be the same child. I remember the first time I saw you.
It was three. You're saying that. What do you think I'm saying? I mean, you know, you got boys yourself, and it's like, what? Sorry, when did that happen? What happened to that cute little cuddly thing? I've got this, you know, hulking great teenager now. So, but yeah.
Yeah, it's something I have to look forward to, because I haven't started teenage years yet. Starting to be a bit terrified. But so when I met you, you weren't working, if I remember correctly. You were working before, and then you took a break when you had your boy, and then you started again. Am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, I can give you a little kind of potted. Yeah. So it gives you a bit of background of, kind of why and how I am, where I am now. I mean, back in the day, as a university, I actually did hotel business management at uni, did a degree in that, and did a year out in the States, working there for like Marriott and Hilton and whatever. Loved the industry. I love the whole hotels, restaurants, all that. But I sort of got to a point that in my mid-20s, where all my friends, you know, had jobs and whatever, and I was sort of looking at mine. I was like, I'm working when everyone else is playing.
Yeah,
you know, I'm serving them when they're cut, you know. Yeah. And although it's a great, and it is a fantastic industry, I was like, I think I want to do something different, even if I end up going back into it. And I decided I'd done kind of marketing and things at uni, you know, as part of the course and whatever. And I'd spoken to friends who were doing, you know, marketing PR and along those lines. And I was like, it looks quite interesting. And I think it would be something that would suit my interests and skill sets. And I landed up writing to, I don't even know, a ton of PR agencies in London, but they all had clients who were either restaurants or hotels, and they were in the travel and tourism industry, because I thought, I've got the understanding and the knowledge, the others, and I, you know, so I might as well use that to benefit, and the rest of the stuff I can learn as I go along. So I got a job at a boutique PR agency who specialized in travel and tourism. Had some great clients and stuff, and I went in as an account exec, very green, worked really hard, had great team, fab boss and stuff like that, who's a really good mentor, and sort of landed up working my way up. And I was an account director, had my own team, own clients, absolutely loved it. But then I decided, after being there for about 6 years, that I just needed to have a change, do something a little bit different, you know, new challenges and things. And I switched to go and work for Macmillan Cancer Support, which is the UK's largest cancer care charity. Amazing, yeah. Phenomenal, fantastic charity. And I headed up their PR and media sort of fundraising team there. and was working there. And that's actually, I had my son when I was working for them, but I went back to work for them after I'd had my son. And then my husband, Tim, came home one day and said, oh, we're moving to Singapore. I was like, oh, okay. So thinking it was only going to be for 2 years. So packed up, my son was two at that point, came over here to Singapore. And I was like, oh, I'm actually, you know, only here for a couple of years. My son's young. I'm actually going to take a little bit of time off and, you know, play mom and kind of discover this new country and whatever. But, you know, the 2 years turned into 3 years and then 4 years. And I was like, oh, actually, you know, it's been great. And it's been lovely to be able to spend time with my son, you know, but he's sort of been going back into school full time and, you know, maybe start thinking about what I can do. And so I was doing sort of through contacts and friends, I know sort of bits and pieces. And then I was started working actually as a receptionist and also did marketing for an upmarket chiropractor out here, which was great. And it kind of got me back into things again and kind of rediscovering my skills. You know, you kind of, especially as when you've been a mum and whatever for a while, you kind of lose yourself a bit and then you lose your confidence. So it was great for that. And then after doing that for about 2 years, the chiropractor actually left Singapore and I was like, what am I going to do? And I was thinking, well, I really enjoyed, I'd redone her website and I'd done a lot of the marketing stuff, as I said, for her. And actually some of her clients, informal clients, I was chatting to them and they were like, oh, we've got new things coming on. So I started sort of going, oh, actually, I can redo your website for you and I could do that. So it sort of started off a little sort of trickle feed of stuff through people I knew. And then from that, I kind of was like, oh, I can do this. And I was like, right, I'm gonna think about doing freelance. And that was kind of a very long, convoluted way of how I kind of went into the freelance world and doing sort of marketing and copywriting. I mean, I know previously I was in PR, but there is a lot of writing that is involved in PR, whether it's, you know, pitch writing, strategy documents for clients, press releases, articles, all that kind of stuff. So I was like, okay, that's the bit I actually really, really enjoy. So I'm going to focus on that. So I decided, yeah, let's go freelance.
And that's brilliant. What is one thing you mentioned is when women take a break from work and then finding back the confidence to go back to work. This is something that another brand we are particularly passionate, and also I'm liaising with someone here in Luxembourg, because particularly realities like Singapore and Luxembourg, where you have a lot of expats. And so, like you, a lot of women tend to follow their husband in the new job, and then they don't find the job immediately. They take the time to explore the place, or they have children, they take a break, and then coming back is hard, because it feels like you've been out, that you're stuck where you were before, and you know the world has changed. And and we talk a lot about transferable skills, because trust me, like moms, or you know, that they juggle everything kind of thing. That is
every day. I think that we don't put enough importance on that, and we kind of think, oh, we're just at home, we're just doing that, but actually all those skills are so relevant. And yes, you do feel like, oh my God, the whole world's moved on and I'm still stuck, as you said, like, you know, from a few years ago, and I don't know anything. And actually you're always learning and you're always growing. And actually all the skills that you have learned, whether it's back in the past or even, you know, an hour before, are all usable, transferable. And if you're someone who is interested, always wanting to learn, flexible, adaptable, then you'll be fine. You can learn things.
Exactly. And it's just, and I say quotation marks, a question of confidence, which unfortunately does affect women when they are in this situation. By listening to you, hopefully they will, you know, you will inspire them to take that leap of faith. I mean, and not it's important.
Confidence is the biggest thing. And the number of women I speak to, and either ones who are starting on their journey, from, you know, I'm going back into the work, or even if they've been in there for a few years, and they all talk about, yeah, like when we first started off, it was daunting, it was scary, we didn't feel we could do it. And then when you start doing stuff and you're like, oh, I can do that. And exactly. Then when someone says to you, that was really good, you're like, yeah, that was really good, wasn't it?
And that's brilliant. So please, people that you are listening to this podcast, make a note of what Peter said. We can all do it. It's just find the confidence and take the leap of faith. But there were any fears you had when you started? There was anything that you were like,
As a freelancer. Oh, I think failing. Just thinking, wow, I'm going to go out there. I don't have the safety net of, you know, a corporate job or a, you know, full-time job or whatever, wherever you're working in whatever industry. I don't have a paycheck. If I'm not working, I'm not getting a paycheck. And so if this doesn't work, like, what's going to happen? How am I going to survive? I'm going to get through and whatever. I mean, okay, I'm married, so it's not the end of the world. I'm not having to, you know, it's not just me solely with the income, but it's just that fear of failure, not doing things right, you know, not getting enough work, not getting enough clients, the imposter syndrome. I'm not good enough. Why is anyone going to pay me to do that? But the fact that I've been doing it now for 6 years and people are paying me to do it, you're like, okay, I can't be that bad. And I'm getting good testimonials and good feedback. And you learn and grow. I look back at stuff I did originally and it was fine. But, you know, I've grown from that and perfected it a bit more and understand more in certain areas. And you're always learning. So you're like, oh, okay, for next time, I'm going to do that because that works really well. But yeah, I think it is the kind of biggest fears was the failing, not having enough work and clients, the imposter syndrome and the no fixed safety net. If you're not, as I said, if you're not busy, you're not getting paid. Where if you're in a job where you're getting a salary, if you're going through a slightly quiet period, you're like, oh, this is quite nice. I can do all these other, you know, bits. Where if you don't, as a freelancer, you start panicking. Oh my God, is that it? I'm never going to get another client. But it's amazing how I'll have those little moments and then I'll get an email or the phone will go and it will be a client I've worked on in the past. Or it's someone who says, oh, I was speaking to so-and-so and they recommended you. I really need some help, you know, with my website copy, or I need some articles written, or I need some blog posts written. Can you help me? And it's amazing how it's just these, you know, there is always something going on, but that was the biggest fear.
I totally relate with that. For me, I don't know if it's the same. It's the failure also in terms of personal failure. Like you attach yourself to you give yourself value for what you do at work, and then if it doesn't work, what is my value? And it's something that is very strong in particularly in certain cultures. I discover, like, Italian cultures are very strong in that. So you're attached to that. So if you fail, if your company fails, or if your business, it's you that fail as individuals. And I'm really trying to, you know, separate that. Now when I teach to my students, I always say to them, well, when I used to teach, I used to say to them, separate the two things, because anyway, there are going to be times that are going to be tough and other times that you're going to be great. Yeah. And it's not, that doesn't define you as a person, define you maybe as a manager or as a, you know.
Totally.
Not as totally. An individual. And also,
I think that's really important. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I do think it's really important. I think it's something as well as you get older. Yeah. I think when you get a bit more confident and, you know, you're like, do you know what? I know that I'm good at this and that. I am going to muck up. I'm human. I'm going to make mistakes, but that doesn't mean that I'm a complete failure. It just means, okay, I need to go and read up on that or learn about that or understand about that more so that I don't do it again. Or, you know, that situation doesn't happen again. So yeah, it is very important.
That's fantastic. It's the concept of a growth mindset that I love, that, you know, you are not born perfect. We are not born champions. We are born humans, and then we can grow and we can make mistakes and we can fail in certain things, but we don't fail as humans. We cannot just learn and improve from where we are. And so that I think is very important. And when we take the road of being independent, I think it's something we really need to remember, because there is, as you said, there is no safety net. Yeah, it's not, doesn't need to be necessarily financial, but it's also the safety net of, you know, if you fall, there is, you can't just say, well, the team failed. We was a team. No, no, it was you. It's you.
Exactly. The buck stops with you.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things as well. You have to own up. You have to go, you know, if you do something, okay, that was me, totally wrong, blah, 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 or whatever, you know, I made a mistake, or I should have, that's fine. Let's work on it, rectify it, and let's sort it out. But there is, you can't turn around and kind of look around you and go, oh, is there a, you know, all of us, you know, mucked up, it's just you.
Exactly, but it is an exciting journey. I mean, I've seen some of the stuff you've done. Thankfully, there is something called social media where I can keep on, you know, see what you're doing, what you're up to. And I saw some incredible work you've done. So it must be very exciting as a journey for you. It must have been super exciting.
Oh, it's, and thank you for that. It's funny, when you do it yourself, you always kind of play it down. Oh, I did that. And it's when someone goes, that's really cool. And you're like, really? It's not that cool.
But
if it's someone else, I'd be saying to them, what are you talking about? That's amazing. So yeah, I've been lucky. It's funny because I've met some people and they've said, oh, are you in a niche? Do you have a niche area that you write in? And I was kind of like, no. And they're like, oh, you should be in a niche. And I went, well, the way that I've evolved and the way that my work has evolved, clients from all different industries have come to me and asked me for all different things. And I have some retainer clients, and then I have other clients who just need various projects and stuff like that. But, you know, I've worked with HR organizations and, you know, educational organizations, private equity, artists, restaurants, just got, there's a whole different plethora of different people and what a deck companies and, you know, interior design and things like that. And I think it's, they've all come and I thought, hang on, can I do that? I will never do work that I don't think I'm going to be able to do and do well. I will always then say to a client, look, that sounds amazing, but you might need to refer to so-and-so or contact this person because I think they might be better. But if they come to me with something and I go, do you know what? I can do that. I can write what they want. Because you can research, you can read stuff, you can understand stuff, and then if you feel you can do it, then just go for it. Just because it's not, you know, in your set niche doesn't mean that your skills, your transferable skills, don't enable you to be able to sort of go, actually, I can do that. And let me have a look. And, you know, and it's amazing what you can do. And I've helped with things like blogs and websites, as I've mentioned before, but, you know, also writing scripts for podcasts and things like that. And for trailers for kind of like ads and things, and also I helped write a book for a company. Yeah, I've written two for them actually, and I'll be doing some more work with them later in the year. And actually, that was really good fun. Very dry subject, but they wanted it written in a way that was engaging and that the average Joe could read and understand. And I was putting in movie quotes and all this kind of stuff, and it was really fun to do. I've been lucky. There's been lots of, you know, sort of fun, interesting, different projects, and that's what keeps it, keeps my job interesting, and that's why I enjoy it.
I don't know if you can say you've been lucky, because there is a lot of what you said before, you own it. I mean, I am one of the people that reach out to you and say, hey, I need this job, and you said to me, this is not, you know, my expertise is very technical. Yeah. Remember the technical guy. And so you own it. You're like, yeah, you're my friend, no problem. But this is not what I want, I can do.
Yeah.
And on the other end, you own it in the same time when you say, well, this is something I've never done, but I know that I can do it. So yeah. I think is maybe like that, there is always a little bit of luck in life. I don't want to say that, but I wouldn't, you know, say that it's just luck, because it's definitely, you clearly have the confidence about your skills that you probably grow over the years, but it's brilliant. Yeah. And I think it's
definitely come with time and working with lots and lots of different clients and working on lots of different projects. I think that's just given me the confidence to go, actually, you know, I can say no to that. And actually, I think it's good sometimes to say no. Learning to say no to people is actually sometimes better. And they will respect you sometimes more as well, because they'll go, oh, okay. And they'll come back to me sometimes. One of my big retainer clients that I have now, big HR company, and originally the managing partner and founder came to me and said, oh, can you do this? And I said, no, what you want, I can't do for you. But I said, I can do this and this, but, you know, totally, it's up to you what you want to do. And didn't hear from her for a while. And then about 3 months later, she was like, actually, I want you, and I want you to do this, you know. And what started off as small, and now I've been working for her for about 3.5 years, and, you know, doing so many sort of different quirky different things for them, that started from me saying no in the first place.
I think you already, one of the questions I wanted to ask you was about tips for people that want to become freelancer. And I think we can already pin through. One is be brave and find your, you know, the confidence to start. Yeah. And the second one is saying no, which is so important, because I've learned it with my experience. I'm not very good at saying no. I always say, okay, I'll try. Oh, yeah. Because you want to help. But actually, what I learned is that you end up doing something that you're not comfortable in doing, yeah, chances are that the person won't be happy with you. You're going to actually be detrimental to your own brand, yeah, because you're doing something that inside you know you should not be doing. And, you know, so it's,
and then it shows in your work as well. Yeah. And then they read my stuff and then they might go, oh, actually, that doesn't, because I don't feel confident. It's also learning to say no as well to clients, because you get some clients who will take the mickey, should I say. They will take advantage. And they're like, oh, could you just do this? And you're like, well, it is outside of the scope of what we've discussed. Oh, but it won't take you long. And could you just do that? And it's really good. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it would really help me. And back in the old, you know, when I first started, I would have been like, yeah, course. And then, you know, I've spent 3 hours or 4 hours doing something and realizing I haven't actually got paid for that. And the client, you know, was like, oh, great, whatever. But it was, no, you've actually taken advantage of me. And so there are now, if a client says to me, and I'm like, unless they are an absolutely, you know, one of my kind of retainer clients who I do a lot with, you know, I might kind of go, oh, look, I'll do that. Fine, you know, not a problem. But I've had clients who go, oh, I know you did the, you know, this for me, but could you also just do that and that, you know, within the same thing? And I'm like, no. They're like, are you sure? No, I will do it for you, but I'm sorry, it was never quoted. Can you please, you know, this is how much it's going to charge. I'm more than happy to do it and blah, blah, blah. And it's interesting. I mean, some will go, yeah, okay, fine. Like, we were just trying our luck. Some might go no, and you're like, fine, I don't want to have clients who are not going to value me.
Exactly.
And that actually moves on to another tip, I'd say, is know your worth.
Absolutely. That's what I was thinking when you were talking. Know your worth, value yourself.
So you put down the price for what your product or service is and stick to it. Do not be, oh no, unless they say, you know, because sometimes I have clients and they might go, oh, look, that's more than we can, you know, we budgeted for. And then I'm like, look, I want to work with you. Is there any way we can change the scope slightly? And that means that I can still work for you and you can still get some of the stuff done. And it means it's within your budget. You know, I always try and work with people, but when they're like, oh, can you give me a discount? Can you give me this? And I'm like, hang on, this is my job. This is my livelihood. This is my business. You know, I have bills to pay and all that, and I've got to live. So, sorry, why is it that you're not valuing what I do? And if you don't value what I do, then actually, do I really want to work with you?
I think it's so important. That's something difficult. I'm actually, I just finished a book on the 10 commandments or something like that for freelancers and marketing owners, small businesses, startups. And apparently, yeah, particularly in marketing, but I'm sure not just in marketing.
Yeah.
We tend to give a lot for free at the beginning. Not at the beginning, generally. Yeah. Yeah. We tend to give a lot for free and, you know, we try to solve the problem even before we've been paid, and we do all of those speeches. And I've been so silly. Like, if you listen to my podcast, there is one that's called Three Mistakes that I made. I've been so silly recently, after all of this year. I mean, I've been, you know, entrepreneur for almost nine years now.
Yeah.
And last year, because I changed the company, because I doubt my own, you know, self-worth, because I changed the company. You know, you go through those changes in your life, and I wasn't as confident as used to be. I spent hours making a proposal for someone, solving already the problem.
Yeah.
Before they actually pay me.
Yeah.
And what happened? They took the proposal that I liked, everything great that we had gone for them.
Yeah.
I went to a cheaper supplier.
Yeah.
Great job. Yay me.
Yeah.
And that was that was particularly stupid of me. But we do it. It's not, that's why my husband bought me the book. It's like, so you don't do it anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's true. And he says exactly what you say. You set your price, you stick to it. There might be people that you decide consciously to reduce the price for whatever reason, that you know, it might be a good client. It might be that is, you know, useful for, whatever.
Well, yeah, there are some clients who are like, oh, actually, this would be really good for my CV, or to say I've worked with, because, you know, so you're like, I'll take that hit, because actually the long term benefit of saying, oh, I've worked for so and so, you know, whatever it makes, you know, can make a big difference, and it's worth it. But yeah, there has to be a reason, and you have to be happy with it. Because also, there's nothing worse when you agree and go, okay, I'll do it. And then you sit there and you are really angry because you're going, I'm doing this and I'm getting paid nothing. I'm getting paid an absolute pittance to do this. And I'm, you know, I could be spending my time doing something else, either more productive for my business, or I could be spending time with my family. But I'm not. I'm sitting here doing something for free for someone else.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's detrimental also in confidence. Like, you enter in this cycle. It's like, oh, they pay me so little, so I'm not good enough. Or, you know, it really affects your way of working. So it's very important to learn to say no, and to say, this is my price, and if you don't want it, I'm sorry. You know, there are going to be people that will take that money. You know, they will be happy with that. Just go for that. But I'm not the right person.
Exactly. And it's also that time when you go, oh, I need to put my prices up a little bit. And you're always a little bit nervous because you're like, oh, I don't want to alienate, you know. And the thing is, you might lose a couple of clients. You might lose a client or whatever. That is always going to happen. You've got to stick to your guns. And go, because other clients will come and they'll pay that, and that will make up for, you know, it's the kind of the balance, whatever. And again, it is that knowing that you're worth, you know what, I've been charging X amount for doing that or selling that or whatever it is. But, you know, it is worth a little bit more. I'm going to charge that. And it, again, it's that confidence and knowing your worth. And the learning to say no.
No, it was very important. I'm very glad that you touched on this, because It can be scary, as we said, it can be scary. There is the fear of failure at the beginning, and you're, you know, desperate to prove your worth. So you take any clients. I mean, I remember when I moved from Singapore, where my business was going okay, well, and then I moved to London, and some of the jobs I took at the beginning, I remember thinking, why am I doing this? I'm paid so little. Yeah. And then one day I decided that that's enough. I mean, for this job, it needs to be at least this amount of money.
Yeah.
And I raised the price and people kept on coming. And I was like, oh, okay, that's good. But sometimes it's good because those free, I mean, when you really start, and maybe you agree with me, you need to start having a bit of case studies that you can show your work. So if you want to help someone that's just starting at the beginning, it's okay to take lower paid jobs because you need to have a portfolio.
Absolutely. And I have to say, I was exactly like you when I first started. I mean, I was barely charging anything, but I knew this is great for my portfolio, for using for case studies, for then going to other people. Oh, look, I've done this and I've done this. You know, because what I do a lot of time, they'll say, oh, can I have some examples? Or can you just show me, especially if it's something that they're like, oh, have you worked in this industry or area before? You know, but I can show them stuff. And then they're like, oh, okay. And sometimes, as I said, it's going back to, you know, it could be an interesting industry that I haven't worked with, but doesn't mean that what they want. I mean, I did a website for a private equity company, and actually they wanted something. They didn't want it like a very dry private equity company website. So they didn't want someone who was all really sort of techie and financial and whatever. They wanted to appeal to the entrepreneurs and kind of startups and the kind of, very sort of dynamic companies out there. And they've said they use a completely different language and different speak. And actually, we know that you can do that. So we want you to do that copy. But I think when you first start off, I mean, as I was saying, and like you were saying, you do stuff that's like, you know, below probably what you would normally charge, but you have to do that. I mean, it's like, even if you have a product, you know, in your first launching, say a product, you have to do it at a reduced price so that people get interested and they get buy-in, and then, you know, you can put the price up and then everyone's like happy to pay that, you know, higher price. So yeah,
I agree. And again, it goes down to the self-worth, so and to be conscious in the decision you make. So I consciously decide to lower my prices to create a portfolio, but I know my worth, and when the portfolio is ready, I will go and increase my salary, my prices, and you go that way. And I don't want to make it as only about prices, but it's really acknowledge your worth as a freelancer, as a
totally. I totally agree. And as you said, it's you making the decision. It's not because you've been forced to make that decision or bullied into that position by a client. So it's you making that conscious decision to say, right, okay, this is for this reason. As you said, build up your portfolio, to have some case studies, to have testimonials that I can use. Because again, all that stuff, you know, when you're a freelancer, you need to have your case studies. You need to have testimonials of people saying, yeah, you're great and stuff like that. Because that's your collateral to, you know, you've got to be a salesperson. That's another tip I'd say if you're going to be a freelancer. You can't just sit at home, you know, working away on your computer and doing whatever you are doing. You've also got to sell yourself. So anything you can use that's going to help sell you and support, you know, the work that you do is vital.
It's very interesting because you talk about selling yourself, and sometimes I have people come back to me and say, I don't need to sell myself. Why should I sell? I'm not the thing. When you talk about selling yourself, it's not selling yourself as individual. You're not selling, you're selling your services. And if you want to be a business in business, you need to be selling your skills, services, products, otherwise nobody's gonna buy. It's like
exactly. It's only you. You're not part of an organization which has, you know, big marketing budgets and big advertising budgets and all that stuff and teams doing all that, that's doing it all for you. You know, you need to be out and about. And I know for some people it can be quite hard, but, you know, just, and it's not like a hard sell, like, oh my gosh, you need to have my services and how can you live without them? And they're amazing, and being pushy. It's just talking to people and explaining what you do and sort of, or if someone says, oh, I can help with that. You know that I do, you know, you've got a website. Oh, I can help you with that. And also just having a good network of people. So I also think, you know, there's people like you who I've done work with. I've got graphic designers and web developers and things like that, and branding people who myself, who I've done work with, and you know collaborating with them, and you can always kind of use them. Oh, you're looking for so-and-so, then you can try Anna, she does, or try Julia, she does X, Y, Z, and sell them. And it's almost like a subtle way sometimes, because if they're going to say you to go and do, could you do a whole like branding stuff, and could you do this, and then you're like, oh, you need some copywriting, and then it's
exactly.
You can go, so it's just subtle ways that you can work with other people. Yeah, it's networking, and also doing a good job, because I have to say I've been very lucky. I think Singapore as well is quite a small network, but all my work comes from, well, 99% of my work comes from recommendations or previous clients, which is great to know. But that doesn't mean I just rest on my laurels. As you said, it's social media stuff, it's getting those testimonials, it's having a website that people can just go and see, you know, it's having the collateral of, you know, whether it's like a portfolio you can send out. And as I said, it's seeing people. I know it's not easy with COVID and whatever, but looking forward to the days. I think people are starting to get out, and conferences are starting to happen, and networking events are starting to happen. And it doesn't have to be a big, scary networking thing. You know, there are always little small local networks that you'll probably find around where people, you know, where you live. And especially women are always, we're always great supporters of other women and helping out and stuff like that. So, you know, if you can find any form of networks around where you live, that even if it's just meeting up for a coffee every so often with a few other people and just having a gas bag and sharing stories, but also everyone knows other people, and it's amazing how they go, oh, I know someone who, you know, needs something that you offer or do or whatever.
Absolutely. The power of networking is incredible. I think that's like in my personal experience, referral marketing, so when people refer you, networking. I love public speaking, so I love to do that, but not everybody needs to do it. And podcasting, that's all marketing you need to do, but you need to market yourself. It's very important. Yeah. I think that's a great tip.
And you said, I think.
But before I let you go, can you tell us, like I ask to every guest, what is a brand that you like and why?
Do you know, there are so many. I mean, our world is stuffed full of brands. It's unbelievable. And it's really hard, because I think it depends, like the brands that resonate with you and maybe probably your values and what you think is important, you know. And there are so many amazing brands out there that are just like quirky, fun. And I kind of see stuff, and, you know, I see the way they write stuff, especially me. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. I love that. That's kind of quirky. But I suppose for me, it's the brands that kind of, they're things like, okay, I've got a couple actually, I thought of. One of them was Toms, the shoes.
Okay.
Very bizarre. I remember I bought a pair of their shoes, I don't know, years ago, and they're like really comfy. I was like, these are the most amazing. They're just really comfy for just like wearing every day and kind of chucking about and whatever. I looked up about them, and I like the ethos of the company. And it's like a third of their profits go to grassroots causes and organizations that, you know, that help it, you know, communities from the ground up and whatever. And I know there's so many out there, but it was like, I liked the shoes. They were just comfy and cool. And the founder, and I cannot remember his name off the top of my head now, just comes across as like, just quite a good, but it's the fact that, I mean, I know some people kind of go, oh, these companies, they're only doing it to get more, but so what, if I'm getting something that I like and want and I'm going to use, but it's helping others, then I'm not going to cast aspersions or complain, whatever. So I've always liked that. But then the other one, but this is going back to my days of hotels and whatever, uber luxury, the Aman hotels, A-M-A-N, Aman hotels.
Never been there.
Check them out. They're very nice. I mean, it's the epitome of luxury, and they are, you know, they have beautiful hotels and exceptional service and whatever, absolutely, and meticulous design. But also they do have that whole sustainability side of things. And they really do support the areas and the communities around them where they, you know, where they have hotels and stuff. And they support, you know, quite a lot of UNESCO heritage sites because they've got quite a few hotels nearby. I know that that's probably, you know, because it helps them because people will go and stay with them because they're, you know, near the UNESCO. But, you know, the fact that they're helping and supporting, and they have a lot of the local community who will work in the hotels and they'll support them. And also things that they have really good waste management and sustainability, and they grow a lot of their own sort of fruit and veg and all that kind of stuff. And again, I know there's a lot of brands that do this stuff, but I like them because also they're a very nice hotel brand.
Okay, I'll see if I can try one day as soon as we can travel again. I'll let you know. Peter, has been an absolute pleasure having you. Thank you so much for all the tips. Thank you for, I think, any person that is considering starting a career in freelancing, we get a lot out of this and more.
Well, I hope people have found it interesting and beneficial. You know, there is so much. I mean, as you said, there is so much to talk around in this area, and there are so many things you could talk about, and, you know, freelancing and all that. And actually, I've got a couple of blog articles and stuff on my website.
Send me the link.
Yeah, with things like myths and stuff on freelancing, and a few other ones about writing and stuff like that. So I'll share that so people can have a look at just a few of the kind of blogs and things. But yeah, more than happy to come on whenever. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you, everyone, for putting up with me.
Oh, thank you for coming, honestly. And we speak soon then. Thank you.
We will. Take care. Bye.